to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Grassroots, community, solar-powered, fun radio.
Fun, fun, fun.
And this is Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my wonderful mommy and co-host.
Famous or infamous?
Yes. my newly re-famous mother, Caroline Kilborn.
Yes, yes. I had gotten many, many nice comments about that article.
And for those who aren't familiar, we had a guest on the show a few weeks ago who is a feature writer for the Burlington Hawkeye, although he was here talking about his novel, Bob Sarr. The novel is in memory of David's Buick. And following the interview, he did an interview of his own with Caroline, and she was like a full-page article in the Burlington Sunday
Hawkeye.
He
does a full page on, he does.
So it was a very good article, and I got quoted a lot. In
yes, you did. You got quoted almost as much as I did.
Because I had stories to tell about my mom.
Pretty good
when
stories.
I was a kid. Yeah, I was a kid. Now, speaking of stories, we have quite a storyteller with us today.
Yes, we do. We certainly do.
This book is a book of personal stories that inspire, motivate, and teach.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
well.
Absolutely.
And our guest today is Stephen Hobson. Stephen has been profoundly deaf since birth, but that hasn't stopped him. He is a former Wall Street stockbroker where he won numerous sales awards and recognition in the coveted executive club 3 years in a row. In less than 4 years, he increased personal sales 1,700%. He went from there to becoming one of the first deaf pilots and the first deaf pilot to gain an instrument rating.
And they said he couldn't do that.
And they said it couldn't be done.
That it couldn't be done, yes.
Today, Stephen speaks around the country and is contributing author of 3 books, including the best-selling Chicken Soup for the College Soul. And just about a month ago, he released his own first book, Obstacle Illusions, Transforming Adversity into Success. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Stephen.
Wow, it's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, your book is... it's easy to read, which is nice because you can read a chapter at a time and absorb it and try to use it in your life, and that's what I like. I like that.
Thank you.
Yeah, each of the chapters is a chapter in your life.
Yeah, they include snippets of my life, the lows, the highs, and some of the most embarrassing moments of my life.
Yeah.
You got the part that was embarrassing, right?
Yes.
I'm sure you read that chapter. They're all in chronological order, but the book itself is not a memoir in the traditional sense because they just take snippets.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And like Mom said, each of the chapters is short, can be read in one sitting easily, and you also have exercises for the reader.
Yes. So I do. The purpose of the exercises is to make the reading of the book a bit more interactive, so that when a person is done reading the chapter, they can relate through the questions that I have for them. They can relate their own lives, their own experiences to what I've been through.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, Stephen, coming to write this book was a long journey.
Yes, it was. It started about a decade ago after I quit Wall Street, which I'm sure I'll talk about at some point. I decided to start writing stories. I started to write basically... what happened was I would go to a coffee shop every day and just write from the heart. And eventually I began to write stories about my own life. And that's how I got started. It took 10 years to write that book.
Oh, my God.
A little more than that.
Well, they say you should write what you know. And, of course, your life. So that was a good start.
absolutely. It's all about writing what, like you said, writing what you know. Mm-hmm. And my, of course, my experiences are things that I know about because I've been through them.
Right.
And so therefore, I'm an authority on the subject.
That's right. That's right.
But you're also on the authority on the subject of overcoming obstacles.
So-called obstacles.
So-called obstacles. Obstacle illusions.
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes.
How did you come up with that title?
Well, you know, I don't remember. But I think it happened, you know, how it is, sometimes you get ideas that come from other people, or you get ideas somewhere along the line, and all of a sudden, the idea becomes more and more powerful, and you start to take it on. That's kind of how it happened. But the reason why I picked that title is to demonstrate that there are no obstacles. They're in the mind. Mm. Now, I know a lot of people will have a hard time with that, because many people are probably thinking right now, well, wait a minute, what do you mean there are no obstacles? This happened, and that happened, and this happened. But the philosophy behind obstacle illusions is that it's all about how you perceive what goes on in your world.
You may not be able to control what happens.
Exactly.
But you can control how you react
exactly.
to it.
Exactly. It's all about how you react to it. Yeah. Like, for example, I'm totally deaf. I've been deaf since birth. For most of my life, I wasn't too happy about that.
But well, I can understand that.
It got to the point where I realized, you know what? This is what I've been dealt with. I've been dealt with this situation. And so now I might as well perceive it in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen overnight, of course. It took a long time to come to that point.
How instrumental were your parents in helping you deal with that?
Yep, my mom was very instrumental in helping me learn how to speak.
How did she teach you to speak?
Well, every day after school, first of all, I would have speech therapy in school with the school therapist for 1 hour. And then I would come home and we would sit on the couch. And my mom would just spend the day or the afternoon going through picture booklets. And she would point to a word beneath a picture, like a picture of a bear, for example. And she would put my hand on her throat and say the word for me. And then she would help me say the word. She would put my hand on my throat, and I would repeat after her.
Mm.
And we would go back and forth like that for a long, long time. And so, if I got it wrong, for instance, if I said ba instead of bear, she would say, no, Stephen. And she would take my hand and put it back on her throat and say bear, like that. And we would go back and forth.
Did she have training? Did she have special training to
no.
do that?
Wow.
That was just instinct on her part.
Yes, it was instinct on her part. She had no training whatsoever. She might have gotten some advice, but you had no therapy training or anything like that.
Wow!
It's like the mother dog knowing what to do when the babies when the puppies are born, kind of that kind of thing.
Yep, that's mother love. Mother love.
Mother love. Yeah, mm-hmm. Mother instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know a thing or two about being a mom.
Yeah,
yeah, with five kids.
Yeah.
Wow, five kids. Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
but we were all perfect.
They were
perfect.
Yes,
perfect. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, they were
okay.
You know, sometimes when they get together and they start talking about things that they did when they were kids, and I did not know about them,
oh.
I'm going, oh, my gosh.
Right, but you know what, though? You knew all along, though. Mom, they know.
Well, some they of it know. I didn't know. Some of it
she,
I did not
she
know.
She did not know.
Did not know. Okay.
She did not know.
She didn't know. Okay, wow.
She was naive.
Trusting. Yeah.
So, let's talk a little bit about one of the first obstacles that you overcame. Where do you want to start?
Well, there were, again, so-called obstacles.
So-called obstacles.
I now see it that way, but Okay, let me just set this straight. I'm not saying there aren't any challenges. I'm not saying that. There's plenty of challenges all around us. But I have gotten to the point where I don't see them as obstacles. I see them as opportunities in disguise. That's how I see them. So you asked me what were my first so-called obstacles. And the first thing that comes to mind would be my learning how to speak. I guess that would be the first one. And the second one probably would be communicating with other people in the relative world when I'm with a lot of people. Conversations take place very quickly, and it's very not easy for me to keep up. And so I would say that.
You have some embarrassing moments.
I do.
In that regard.
I do. Very embarrassing. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes. And if you want to know about these embarrassing moments,
you got to read the book.
Read the book.
Right, read the book. Yes.
Because they are amusing, and the way you tell them makes it even better, you know. It really does.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting, it's interesting that you mentioned that in terms of amusing. You say that it's amusing in the way I describe it.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't my intent. My intent was to write from the heart and describe it the best as I could. But what's happening, much to my surprise, is that not only do I have many adults enjoying the book, but I also have some young people loving the book also.
I can understand that.
Let me give you an example. I met this woman at a seminar in Chicago, and she bought a copy of the book. She had two boys, maybe 10, 11, maybe 12. I don't really know the exact age. And they were on their way home to L.A. from Chicago. And the boys were fighting over who got to read the book. And so one of them started to read it and couldn't put it down and didn't want to give it to his brother. But his brother was dying to read it, so they had to negotiate. And how they did it was one boy would read one chapter and then the other boy would read the other chapter, and they took turns. So, and then I got an email from another mother whose babysitter's son is now reading the book, and I'm not quite sure how old he is. I think 9 or 10. And wow, he's loving it too. So, and this has become the biggest surprise for me. Young people are liking the book also. I'm shocked. That was not my intention.
Well, you know, many young people have something that they feel they're not good at, and everybody else is, and they feel inadequate. And so if they can see how you overcame that, yeah, I have hope. There's hope for me.
Yes, absolutely. And it's amazing what's happening. More and more young people are reading it now, and I say, who knows? I was thinking how nice it would be if this became the next Harry Potter kind of book.
Yeah, wouldn't it, though?
Would that be nice?
Yes, anyway, it would.
You never know.
Well, you never know.
You're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Stephen J. Hopson, the author of Obstacle Illusions, Transforming Adversity into Success. You will find yourself laughing and crying and contemplating life in a deep, meaningful way. That's the quote on the book from Marcy Shimoff, who is herself a New York Times best-selling author of Happy for No Reason and Chicken Soup for the Soul, and a former Fairfielder as well. Let's talk about that step that you took leaving Wall Street and deciding when you decided to become a transformational speaker and writer. What prompted you to make that?
Okay, well, in 1995, in 1996, I decided that I was going to take a break from the hustle and bustle of Wall Street, and I decided to go to Florida for a week for vacation, which is something I did a couple times a year. And so in January or February of 1996, I decided that I was going to go away for a week. And so one morning, I went to the beach. It was a gorgeous, beautiful day. The sky was blue, the sun was shining, and I was practically the only person on the beach that morning. And so I plopped down on a lounge chair with a good book, and then I fell asleep. Eventually, I drifted further and further into the dreamland, and I'm thinking 20 minutes had gone by when all of a sudden I heard, quote-unquote, a voice or something, a thought, rammed its way through my head, and I was jolted awake. And at that point, when I opened my eyes, I was blinking against the hard sun because it was so bright that day. And I was confused because I didn't know what had just happened. I looked around to see if there was anybody on the beach who might have come over to talk to a deaf man's ear. But there was nobody. And I realized that God or the universe or my higher self or something had spoken to me. And what I had heard was that it was not my destiny to be a stockbroker, but to be a global transformational speaker and an author. Now, the funny thing was, I had not spoken to an audience in quite some time, and I had never written a book, but somehow I knew that that was going to be my destiny. It was just a strong feeling. That was my turning point.
Well, that's the way God works. I can tell you that.
Did you immediately go quit your job?
No. I went back to New York. I told my manager, and my manager was disappointed. Keep in mind, I was making six figures that year. I was making $300,000 a year. I was doing very, very well. And of course, my company was happy that I was making them good money. But my manager somehow agreed that perhaps it was time for me to go. Strangely enough, we both agreed that my time was coming to an end. So it took me about 6 months to wrap things up, and then I walked out.
And where did you go?
Nowhere. No. Basically, I just put things in place to take myself to the next level. I started speaking. I started to write stories. I mentioned earlier in the radio interview that I started writing stories after I quit Wall Street. I had some money, so that allowed me to live off my investment for a little while. And that's how I got started. And then I started speaking more and more.
Now, do you have a section from Obstacle Illusions that you would like to read to the audience today?
Well, I'd like to read a section from Obstacle Illusions that I would like to read to the audience.
Yes.
Well, certainly, the chapters may be a little too long for me to read. I don't know.
I think a shorter chapter would probably be fine.
Which one? Because you
I'll let Mom pick one out while we continue to talk.
Okay, that'll be good. So yes. Mom will pick a chapter, and then we go ahead.
Right. Okay, so many people decide they want to write a book and become professional speakers, even though, as you mentioned in your book, or maybe it was on your website that I saw where you said public speaking is the number one fear. But there are still a lot of people who think it would make a great career. But not too many actually take the leap and do it. Do you have some advice for somebody who wants to do that?
Yes, absolutely. Number one, face your fears. Make a decision. Make a firm decision that you are going to head in that direction. And then call up all the different service clubs in the area, Kiwanis, Lions, Rotary, You name it, they're all looking for speakers. Mm-hmm. They don't pay you, but they'll feed you. And here's my philosophy. If you're starving, go be at those clubs. They'll feed you. They'll put food in your belly. And the reason why that's a good way to start off is because you have a live audience in front of you, number one. And number two, they're very forgiving. If you make a mistake or stumble or flub your lines or whatever, they've seen it all. And they're very forgiving. So that would be a good way to start.
And you're making some business contacts.
That's right. That's right. You are, absolutely.
I found it.
He found it.
On the playground.
On the playground, okay.
I love this.
Okay. Mom said she loved this, so I'm going to read chapter 3, On the Playground. Little did I know how soon my newfound confidence would be put to the test. This is after something that had happened. A week before, I had my fifth grade teacher who said 3 most powerful words that forever changed my life. It's in chapter 2, I think.
Yeah,
it was. And so you'll have to read the book to find out what those 3 words were. But so this story is what happened after. Let me start over again. Little did I know how soon my newfound confidence would be put to the test. It happened on the playground during lunch recess a week later. It was a beautiful spring day with sunny skies and a warm, caressing breeze that blew across the landscape. 10 minutes into lunch recess, I saw David, the class bully, walking towards me with a cocky swagger. His lips curved into an Elvis Presley sneer. He was the spinning image of the Fonz from Happy Days, with greasy black hair combed straight back, 1950s style. He always wore a gleaming white t-shirt with a pack of cigarettes rolled up in one, sometimes both sleeves. Like Fonzie, David did his best to strut his tough guy image. Up to that point, he had literally beaten up everybody in the whole school except for me. Not that I was tough or anything, but for some reason he had left me alone. Until that day, my body went rigid. My time had come, I remember thinking. With steady eyes, I watched him. The other kids quickly formed a circle around me like a bunch of boxing spectators at Madison Square Garden. They left just enough of an opening for David to make his entrance. As soon as he was in, the circle closed immediately. It was almost as if the other kid didn't want to let either of us escape without first seeing some action. My heart quickened with each step he took. Nervously licking my lips, I had no idea what I was going to do. My eyes gradually met his. Suddenly, as if some unseen force had taken over, I shoved my hand right palm up like a traffic cop. Thrown off guard, David slowed to a crawl. I licked my lips some more, trying to muster up my courage. Then my voice, dripping with sarcasm, I pointed to my dress and I said, "Kid, do you see this hearing aid box? Let me just interject here that I had a hearing aid box that was strapped around my dress that stuck out like a sore thumb. And I had 2 hearing aid cords that ran up to both ears, so I looked like someone from Mars."
Okay.
So I said, "Kid, do you see this hearing aid box?" The bully snickered and cackled like the cruel witch in The Wizard of Oz. His eyes briefly flickered in fear, but no one else saw that except me. It gave me an unexpected boost in confidence. I raised my voice an octave and screamed, "If you punt this box, it'll blow up the whole school."
Oh, that's great.
My hand clapped like thunder, startling the bully. His face immediately turned paper white. His eyes widened, and he slowly backed away. As if on cue, the circle magically opened up behind him. And then he did something that forever ruined his rough and tough tumble image. The bully ran home, as fast as little legs could carry him. Folding my skinny arms across my chest, I triumphantly watched the bully grow smaller and smaller. And then I looked around. Some kids were laughing, clapping, and whooping, while others vigorously rubbed their eyes in disbelief. Wow, did I just defeat the bully? Instantly, I was transformed into the most popular kid in the whole school. Everybody wanted to be my friend after that. Sometimes we find out that we do have courage when we're put to the test. The test may not be comfortable, but we become stronger if we face it with courage. Mrs. Jordan's words, that was my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Jordan's words had given me courage, not just in the classroom, but outside it as well. She had made me feel I mattered, and that helped me to stand up for myself. And it felt really good.
Yeah. Thank you. That was great.
That's great.
That was Stephen Hobson reading from his book, Obstacle Illusions. One of the things that really impressed me about that type of chapter, or chapters like that in your book, is that you actually express some appreciation for these people who caused challenges for you in your life. Why is that?
Because I believe very strongly that we all have an agreement with each other. From a spiritual point of view, we all agree to come into each other's lives to carry out a role. Like the bully, he carried out that role. Why? Because it was to teach me how to, first of all, stand up on my own 2 feet, and second of all, discover the power of having courage to stand up for myself. That was my lesson.
Right. I wonder what happened to him.
I don't know.
Maybe he's listening today.
You never know.
You never know.
Never be. Yeah, you never know.
Because maybe he learned something from that. Maybe that event changed his life,
too. Oh, I'm sure it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It worked both ways.
Yeah.
Now, Stephen, when you started out, you left Wall Street, you made a firm decision to be a speaker and an author. You started writing stories. You started speaking basically anywhere they would feed you.
Yes.
Did you start out with this material, or how did you come to develop your stories?
Very good. Very good question. In the beginning, it was kind of rough. Challenging. Even as I was writing my stories, I didn't quite know what my topic would be. I was constantly trying to figure out what my platform was going to look like. And so I had help from reading other books like Chicken Soup for the Soul. They had many, many stories that I fell in love with, that I was able to identify with. So I started speaking about those stories, and then eventually, as I was writing my own stories, I began to incorporate my own experiences, and it was just like a natural progression. I had no idea what the final result would look like. I still don't today. Even a decade later, I am still, working with my work, my materials.
Mm-hmm.
But the key here is to allow it to develop naturally.
Right. And for somebody like for me, when I read this and I try and think of examples in my life that would be stories that could be developed in this way, it's sometimes hard for me to think how do I say this? Each of these stories is very complete in itself. And the lessons from the story are tied in so seamlessly. And it's difficult for me to think how I would do that with my life stories.
Okay.
So how did you do that?
Another very, very good question. Let me just respond to that by first telling you, first of all, everybody has a story.
Yeah.
Everybody. You do not need to have a disability in order to make a difference. That didn't really matter. In fact, I think everybody has a disability of some sort. Some of it is more obvious than others. Like my definition is more visible. But you might have a disability that nobody knows about. That might be internal. You never know. But we've all had challenges. And that's the one thing that ties everybody together. We've all had challenges. We've all had challenges. And so we all can help each other. That's why we're here on this planet, to help each other. So you do have something to share. You do have a story. You do have life lessons. I'm sure you can rattle off at least 5 things you've learned in your life. And you can share that. Yeah, and you can share that with people. Yeah. You don't necessarily have to have a disability. It just so happens that I have a disability, and so that's giving me my platform. That's giving me my mission in life. Mm-hmm. But the same thing can happen for other people like yourselves. You all have something to share with people. We all learn something.
Well, like we all have, everyone has talents. Some talents show, some do not.
Right.
And, you know.
Right, absolutely.
Now, stories are one of the best ways to teach and to convey what you have learned to somebody else. And what I really admire about your book is how you have used your stories. And that even if you came to this book not particularly interested in learning anything or being motivated, you would still enjoy it just for the stories.
Yes. Well, you know, if there's anything I've learned as a speaker, as a professional speaker and now a writer, I've learned that people love stories.
Yeah.
Bedtime stories, if you will. People love stories. They don't want to be told what to do. They don't want to sit there and hear a speaker or read a book that's okay. 5 steps to happen. It's A, B, C, D. I mean, you want to share the steps to happen, maybe, but it's important to share your stories because it makes it more real. People identify with you on that level, mm-hmm. and it makes you, number one, it makes you authentic, and number two, it makes you more enjoyable to listen to or to read.
Right. That's exactly right, yeah.
People like stories because that's the one thing that's connecting all of us. We're part of the same fabric of existence. And stories tie people together.
You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. Our guest today is Stephen J. Hobson. His book is Obstacle Illusions. You can find out more about it at obstacleillusionsbook.com. And you can find out more about Stephen at his website, which is S as in Sam, J as in John, Hobson, that's HOPSON.com.
You said that better than I did. So I'm glad you spelled it for me.
You know, just as we're all connected one to another, as even you and I, but in families, and the history of families is connected. And I like to write about my childhood and I dearly wish that my parents and my grandparents had written some stories for me to read now, you know?
Right. And you know what? It's never too late. It's never too late to start.
Well, I've started, yeah.
You've started already. Yeah. That's great. So keep going.
I'm encouraging my friends to start. And I have two new people in my writer's group, by the way.
Right.
After that article. Yeah.
And don't forget, Mom, we have those stories that Aunt Julia wrote.
Oh, I have all those,
yes.
Yeah.
We had a family jewel. Her great aunt who wrote the stories of the family from the 1800s.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I love that time period for some reason, the 1800s.
And that was here in Iowa.
Really? Wow. Mm-hmm. I remember helping my sister move a couple of years ago. That was in Albany, New York, and I was helping her move into her apartment. It was a brownstone, very beautiful brownstone. And I remember as I was walking into the front door, there was a little thing on the wall that with the date that the house was built. Mm. It said 1864, something like that. And for some strange reason, I felt compelled to put my hand on it. Nothing happened. I mean, I won't say that a bolt of lightning struck a wall.
Or the wall opened.
And there was gold behind the brick. There was gold behind there. That's right. There was gold in that house. No, but what happened was, I don't know, I just felt...
connected.
Yes. And so who knows what's going on with that, but I love the 1800s. That would be a very interesting story.
Yeah. Yeah, I kept those, you know. I know my kids...
No, I have them, too.
Do you?
Oh, good.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Mom and daughter have them, but, you know.
Yeah, good. Yep.
In fact, I've even written some stories based on some of those stories.
Well, you have to give me those stories, Monica. You have to share those stories with me.
Someday.
This is a fun group of people here. I don't think I've ever had so much fun on a radio show before. I mean, I've had fun before, but this is really fun talking to you guys.
Well, it's our pleasure.
Look what I cut out of the, or got this article out of the Burlington Hawkeye. It's an 8-year-old boy who's going blind, and he's trying to get ready for that by doing certain things, and I thought you might be interested in seeing that.
Oh, thank you.
So, Stephen.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. Are you giving it to me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
I'll take it home.
Yes.
So, speaking of stories, I would like to know the story of what brought you to Fairfield.
Okay. Well, I had been speaking for over a decade, but when the year 2010 rolled around, and I felt that I wanted to go back to school. I've always liked school. And I hadn't missed the academic environment, so I thought, well, I want to go back to school. But I wanted to go to a school that had some type of spirituality in it. And so I did a Google search, and I typed in spiritual psychology. That's what came to me. And so on the results page, there was a school in California, the University of Santa Monica. And I thought, wow, this sounds like a good program. They had a transpersonal psychology program. And I thought, you know, this is something that I would be very interested in. And I was very attracted to the idea of going to a warmer place. I was very tired of winter by that point.
You were living where?
I was living in Ohio all the time.
Okay.
I had lived in New York City and Michigan and Ohio, and they all have brutal winters. And by this point, I was like, it would be nice to live in California. So I applied, and one thing led to another. But I will say that it didn't work out. Without going into great detail, I would just say that it didn't work out. So then I looked again. I typed in spiritual psychology again, and I found out about MUM. Harvard University of Management. And I thought, I never heard of TM. I had never heard of any of that stuff. So I thought, well, I'll come out here for the Visitors Weekend in April of 2010. And let me tell you, I cried 4 times that weekend because I remember saying to myself, I have come home.
Wow.
4 times. And then on the plane ride after the weekend was over, I cried again. I have come home. So I knew that the universe was bringing me here to Fairfield. Mm-hmm. Now, the funny thing is, I had no idea why or how or what would happen, but I trusted that that was meant to be. So I ended up moving to Fairfield in August of 2010. I became a student, and I studied Vedic science, which is the study of consciousness. So that's how I came to Fairfield.
And are you still a student?
No, I graduated a year after that. And so I'm now a former student of MUM.
Okay, so you must have come in August of 2009.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry, you're right, 2009. Yeah, I have my mouth wrong.
You wouldn't be done yet.
That's right,
okay,
it was 2009.
That was the fastest year on record.
No, it was 2009, you're right. I came in it was January of 2009 when I thought about going back to school. Then I came for the visitor's weekend in April 2009. Mm-hmm. I thought I was matriculated in August 2009. You're right.
Great.
You're right.
And you're staying in Fairfield.
I did. I love it.
Well, so do I. Mom's in Mount Pleasant. She's down the road about 25
miles. Oh, how
nice.
Yeah. Monica's dad, who's deceased, would love it now. He would love it here because he was an artist and
an organic farmer.
Yeah, organic farmer. Yeah,
and very health conscious and.
Oh, cool! I love health conscious people.
And he was one of the first siddhas.
Oh well, I'm the first deaf siddha.
Aha!
According to the person who taught me, who taught thousands of people around the world. He's never taught a deaf person to become a siddha, and so I'm the first deaf siddha.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, you talked about wanting to go to California, and it didn't work out, but recently you made a trip to California to promote your book. How did that go?
Well, that went really well. I was invited to go to Deborah Perlman. She is the seminar leader for the Yes to Success. Did you got that?
Yes to Success.
Right. Some people thought I said something different. I won't tell you what they thought. I think they thought I said Yes to Sex.
We won't go there.
But I think that's what they thought I said. Anyway. okay. I went to the Yet to Start seminar in LA, and that went very, very well. I promoted my book. I talked about my book, and I sold out at the seminar. I didn't have enough books.
Great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
It was fun. I really had a nice time. And for those of you who don't know Deborah, she's a beautiful, authentic person who had relaunched her seminar series, and in fact I'm going to Chicago for another seminar at the end of April, and I'm going to be sending out an email to a lot of people about that this weekend. It's really a marvelous program.
I participated in a Yes to Success seminar probably 30 years ago, maybe 25 to 30 years ago. And it was, and I'm not a self-help kind of person. I don't go to a lot of seminars. I prefer to figure things out myself. But I did get a lot from Yes to Success.
Yeah, well, she's even better. I don't know what it was like back then, but she's even better now. She's got powerful speakers. On the list, and she's got some great techniques that have helped people. So I would highly recommend that you look into going again.
That's a good idea. Good idea. Let's talk, Stephen, about how you published Obstacle Illusions.
Okay.
So who is your publisher, and how did that process work?
Okay, well, my publisher is First World Publisher and Company in local Fairfield. Now, let me just make it clear that I self-published, but I hired First World to, put things together for me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I did hire them to do the work for me, but yeah. I self-published. How that worked was some people told me about First World, and I decided to check it out, and I hired them.
For people who are curious about First World, we have a couple of interviews with Rodney Charles.
Yes.
And they're available on the website, the KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com website, if you want to learn a little bit more about how First World Publishing works. So are you using print on demand, or did you do a large print run?
I think it's definitely print on demand. So anytime I need new books, I just tell my publisher, and they ship them to me. Like, I'm doing a book signing tomorrow at Revelations.
Right, don't want to forget that.
Right. Yeah, I'm doing a book signing tomorrow at Revelations at 2 o'clock upstairs. And in order for that to happen, I had to order some books. And so that's what I would do. I would just order a certain number of copies and then bring them with me. That's how that works. Or when I have a speaking engagement, I order some copies and bring them with me. They're also available on Amazon.com.
And probably at Revelations all the time.
Oh, definitely, yeah. They have a few copies there.
I've seen it in there, yeah.
Yeah, they have like a little table there, very nicely set up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really appreciate our local bookstore.
Yes, we
do. I love that bookstore.
Yeah.
And we miss our other one.
Yeah, yeah.
21st Century. Did you know?
No.
You here?
No, I wasn't here. Yeah. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it closed about a year ago.
Oh, too bad.
Yeah. But they did a great job for many years for the community. So, when you, the world's first deaf instrument rated pilot.
Yeah, let's talk about that a minute.
Let's talk about that.
First of all, I just want to say that deaf pilots have been flying since 1948. Did you know that?
No.
Most people think that I'm the first deaf pilot ever, and that's not true. Deaf pilots have been flying since 1948. And when people hear that, they're very shocked. And the reason why they're shocked is because most people, when they fly commercially.
Yeah.
They fly on the airlines, and they fly in and out of airports with control towers.
Yeah.
But what they don't know is that out of 12,000 airports in this country, only 700 have control towers, and the rest of them do not. And you do not need to use the radio when you go in and out of those other airports. You have to follow certain protocol. Like when you're getting ready to land or take off, you have to follow certain procedures. In fact, there are some planes out there that don't have radio still today. Like sports aircraft, small planes, there are no radios.
Wow.
Yeah. And most people don't know that.
No, they don't.
Well, in terms of being the first deaf instrument pilot, let me just say that in 2006, I became the first deaf pilot to get a rating, which is called the instrument rating. An instrument rating is a rating by which you fly in bad weather, which means you are flying through the clouds. You can't see where you're going. And as a result of that, you have to monitor the instruments on the panel in front of you. And the panel tells you how the plane is behaving, because when you're flying in the clouds, you have no visual reference.
Right.
You don't know what the plane is doing. Your body might tell you one thing, but the plane could be doing another thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to follow that. And so you're actually flying blind. And in 2006, I became the first deaf and blind pilot.
Oh, yeah.
I was waiting to see if you got that.
Yeah.
Because you know I'm not blind.
No.
Right.
And then I usually follow that with how proud Helen Keller would be.
Oh, she would.
Because, you know, she was actually blind, but I'm not.
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
Well, that's what happened to John F. Kennedy Jr., they think. He was actually, didn't realize that he was flying upside down or whatever, you know. It just completely disoriented.
Well, he was flying at night, and there was fog.
Yeah.
And he was flying over water, which makes it even more difficult to see what's going on. And so he was not adequately trained as an instrument pilot, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
Now, you have a story in Obstacle Illusions about landing at one of these airports that has a control tower.
Yes.
Yes. Is that the only time that you did that, or have you done that?
Yeah, I can tell you quickly what happened, though. I was flying my way back home. I had gone to Kansas City. I had flown all the way out there for a Delta pilot conference. And then on my way back, I decided that I wanted to go into this airport with a tower because they had a restaurant on the field, and I was hungry. But I had no way of calling the tower.
Yeah.
Or I had no way of hearing the tower. So I thought to myself, okay, one of the other deaf pilots told me what he had done to go in there without having to use the radio. He did use the radio. He spoke, but he didn't receive anything.
Right.
And I thought I would try the same thing. So I got to the airport, and I flew above the airport, and I told the tower controller that I wanted to land at the airport. And the only way he could give me, the only way he could tell me whether I could land there was to give me a light gun landing, which is, in the old days, if you had a radio failure, you couldn't communicate with the tower. So the tower would point a big gun with a light thing at the end and point it at you and give you one of three colors, red, white, or green. If he gave you the green light from the tower, it meant you could land at the airport. You had permission to land there. If he gave you red, it means you don't have permission. And if he gave you yellow, it means to wait, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I circled above the airport, but I was well above the boundaries. There was a certain level that I couldn't go below, like 3,500 feet. I couldn't go below that because otherwise I would be in their airspace. So I flew about 1,000 feet above that, and I looked at the tower below me, and I spoke into the microphone, and I said, I'm deaf. I would like to come for a landing on runway 32, I think I said. And I was waiting for him to give me the light gun. So I made three circles above the airport, and I thought, well, if by the time I made my third circuit, he didn't respond, I would go home. But just as I was finishing my circuit above the airport, he gave me the green light. So I landed. And then I got out of the plane, and I looked up at the tower, and I waved to the tower controller. And I expected him to wave back. But instead of waving back to me, he told me to come up. He wanted to speak to me. And I thought to myself, oh no, did I do something wrong? Because remember, this is an airport with a control tower. And I didn't really have a two-way radio communication. So I thought I was in trouble. So I went up to the top of the tower, and I met the guy. And the first thing I noticed was that he had a big bump on his forehead. And so I said to him, what happened to your forehead? He said to me, well, do you know how it took me a long time to give you the green light? I said, yes. He said, well... And he pointed over to the corner of the room. There was a table. And the light gun was on the top of the ceiling. He had to climb up on that table to get the light gun off the ceiling. But he didn't know how to unlock. He didn't know how to take it off because he had not used it.
Oh.
So he was fighting with the thing on the ceiling. And finally, when it came off, it fell.
Hit him on the head.
So he had a big bump on his forehead. And I said, oh my God, I'm so sorry that happened. I felt really bad. He said, oh no, no, don't worry. Go on downstairs and have breakfast. And when you're ready to take off, we'll get you out of here. And that's what happened.
Great.
Well, it's a wonderful experience to fly, period. But I would imagine for you it's even more exhilarating.
It is. It really is.
Yeah.
Well, we are almost out of time.
Yeah. Oh, this has been great. This has been great.
Yeah. We want to remind our listeners, if you're listening on our live broadcast, which is Friday, April 7th, then tomorrow, April 8th at 2 p.m. at Revelations, upstairs, Stephen Hobson will be signing his book, Obstacle Illusions. Are you going to do a reading?
Well,
also?
Basically, what I'm going to do is I'll give a little talk, and then I'm going to draw a quick video, and then I'll draw a couple of slides of book readers who've taken pictures of themselves with the book. Like, for example, I have a man who's a fireman, and he took a photograph of himself with a book. I have a photograph of a pilot who was flying at 25,000 feet and reading my book.
Oh.
And if you missed part of the interview today and want to listen to it again, it will be rebroadcast a week from Monday morning. We're having usually it's the following Monday, but we're going a week from Monday morning. So that would be April 18th at 8 a.m. And it will also be available on writersvoices.com and crewfm.com once we get it posted. And this Monday morning, we have a very exciting interview with one of my all-time favorite writers, Anne Lamott, mm-hmm. who wrote my favorite book on writing called Bird by Bird. Her latest book is a novel called Imperfect Bird. She will be in Des Moines next week on April 13th, and so we're getting her Monday morning at 8 a.m., April 11th, so I hope you can listen into that. Stephen, do you have any final words of advice for people who would like to write?
I do. I just want to say that nothing happens by chance. Everything happens for a reason. Look for the good in everything, because if you look hard enough, you'll see healing taking place in there somewhere.
And Mom, do you have a
closing
quote for us?
Oh, yeah, I do, too. I have a final quote. This is from Matthew Kelly, who's an inspirational speaker as well. Develop the ability to say everything without saying anything. Action is the loudest voice.
Yes. Wow.
Thank you so much for being with us, and have fun tomorrow at your book signing.
Thank you very much.